Steve, how you feeling?
Steve, I'm fine. There was nothing wrong with me. I just didn't feel like coming on.
Oh, there you go. You're going to pull a Lauren Stitch on me. I didn't really feel like doing it this week.
Oh, okay. A blast. Oh, yes, I do remember something
yes.
to that effect. Right, okay.
You know what?
No, we love Lauren. It was one of those bronchitis, lung infection, chest cold type things, so.
It wasn't the or maybe was it the Corona Heights for you? You wouldn't get the coronavirus. For you, it would be the Corona Heights. That was good.
It's hard to get coronavirus in your house.
Exactly. Maybe some of the birds in the backyard brought it.
Yeah. Well, no, that was the swine flu, I think.
Well, it's okay because it's kept you busy. You've done a ton of writing, including your AP Indy stuff that we didn't get a chance to talk last week. Was wonderful, and I had Lenny, Lenny who had has a statue of AP Indy in his living room. Lenny paid tribute, but
if it was up to Lenny, he'd have AP Indy in his living room.
Exactly, stuffed like Farlap.
Exactly.
Well, you were busy anyway. You've been banging away on the keys, and let's get a quick Fountain of Youth recap and your thoughts on Patrick. With two serious contenders.
Well, listen, good for Patrick. I mean, he's burst on the scene with, two horses that he found. And obviously they both look like very good horses. And you just have to watch. All you have to do is watch the way he trains these horses, especially like Etier Indian. If you watched his last few works, he was working him like 7 furlongs on the grass, and he had him in front. You don't usually see that too often. So you knew that he wanted to put speed in him. He wanted him close to the pace. But working him 7 furlongs on the turf, he wanted to get a lot of bottom into him. And what he's been doing, I think, he's doing quite a bit of it also with Sol Volante, was that he'll work him long on the grass and short on the dirt. And, that's one thing I always liked about Patrick as a trainer, is that he always did things his way, that most trainers didn't do. And listen, most trainers do not train that way. But that's Patrick. He's always been that way. I remember the way he used to train when he trained Lionheart back in those days and some of his earlier. And people forget what he accomplished. I mean, to have a horse like All Along, this is at a time, by the way, where fillies and grass fillies were not horse of the year. And he gets All Along to win the Arc. Now, normally that would be the end of the year for most horses. He takes All Along and sends her to the United States and runs her in the 3 biggest grass races in the United States, and she wins all of them. I mean, people don't realize what an incredible accomplishment that was. And then he would have won the Breeders' Cup Turf the following year with All Along, except that Angel Cordero, who was not really known as a turf rider, did not give her the best of rides. She just got zipped right at the wire. But he's got a long history. He's done amazing things. People laughed at him when he came to run in the Belmont Stakes against Easy Goer and Sunday Silence with a French horse named Le Voyageur.
Sure.
That most people said, what is he, nuts? Who the heck is that? So what does he do? He runs second. He finishes a length behind Sunday Silence, third. So, he's right behind Sunday Silence. He does things his way, and it's coming out with these two horses, and they complement each other. You got AT Indian, who has the speed, and you got Sol Volante, who comes from off the pace, so they're not going to get in each other's way. And so far, he's done a good job keeping them separated, and he probably, obviously, will all the way through the Derby.
Anything else from that fountain? Anything?
Well, the main thing
that group
about
of horses.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one thing, in fact, I wrote before the race was, and listen, I'm not knocking Safi Joseph's decision to scratch from the outside post, but when you're on a schedule, a tight schedule, a derby schedule, and you got a sound horse, it's got to take, to me, it's got to take an awful lot not to run. You can't be afraid of post positions because you can't be afraid of losing a prep race. This was not the Florida Derby. This was the Fountain of Youth. So if he breaks from the far outside and he gets caught wide on the first turn and he runs second or third, no big deal. He's going to pick up points for that race anyway. And if he's good enough, he'll pick up points in the Florida Derby. But you don't have to win that race. But you're going to alter the horse's schedule. That horse, if he had stayed on schedule, would have gone into the Kentucky Derby with 8 lifetime starts, all at Gulfstream. So now he's got to take the horse out of town, run him over Tampa Bay, a surface that you never know.
I mean, not for everybody.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, it's a quirky surface, and some horses don't handle it. And if he doesn't handle Tampa, then where is he? Now, if he wants to run the Florida Derby, what does he do? He's got to come back in 3 weeks? I don't think so. I don't think he's going to come back. I mean, listen, maybe he will, but most trainers nowadays are not going to come back in 3 weeks. So, you know, the one thing I wrote, like, on my blog, and I said, what's going to happen? How is he going to feel if Etienne breaks out of there like a shot and gets to the rail? Well, guess what?
Yep.
With Florent Giroux up, I mean, who's not exactly known as a major gate rider.
Well, he's gotten very aggressive.
That's not his reputation from that far out at Gulfstream. So he breaks like a rocket because Patrick had told him to get out there, and the thing that Patrick loved most, which you had to love, is that when you rush a horse out of the gate like that and send him all the way to the rail, sometimes it's hard to get that horse back. You know, the horse becomes headstrong. This horse came right back to him, and that's what really thrilled Patrick the most. The way he put it, he says he came back to him like a sweet boy, and he was. He just relaxed after getting to the lead. So it shows the horse is tractable and he's got a good mind to him as well. So again, I don't know what Safi Joseph was thinking when he watched the race, when he saw that, you know, my horse had broken. I would have been sitting right off of him. But listen, you can't second guess. He did what he thought was right. I'm not going to criticize him for it. But now he just has to hope that his horse handles the Tampa surface okay. And he runs a big race, and then he's got to figure out what to do with him next. Because after you run this race, you know, we're going to have to go to Keeneland for the Bluegrass or the Arkansas Derby or the Wood Memorial. I mean, he's going to have to really travel, which he wasn't planning on doing. He was planning on staying at Gulfstream. And again, if he wants to do that, he'll have to come back in 3 weeks. I don't know how tough a race he's going to have at Tampa. So we'll see what happens. I mean, but that's the difference between a veteran trainer and a young trainer. Safi Joseph is a terrific young trainer. Take nothing away from him. He's going to be a major force. But he's a young trainer, and, you know, that's the philosophy now. It's all analytics. So, you've only had one winner from post 13 in the last, 11 months or something. You know, there's always some kind of statistic to make you do something. But sometimes you just have to trust your horse and just trust your jockey to follow instructions and hope all goes well and stick to your schedule. Old school thinking.
Old school. There you go. All right. Well, let's table Fountain of Youth and turn our attention to yesterday's fields that came together. And we'll do it chronologically, really, the way they're going to run between New York, Tampa, and then we'll go to the West Coast, where the heaviest heavyweights are involved. And the Gotham, this is kind of fun, Steve, to have so many confirmed one-turn types lined up in here, and some that have already said, even if they win and earn 50 points, they're probably not going to be aggressively seeking a spot in the Derby gate.
Well, in the field, the first question I ask, where are all the Derby horses? I mean, this is a race that's actually, it's in a great spot on the calendar, and it's a great, you know, progression.
Yes.
And you see, again, we're going to go back to the old school again. But, you know, they used to run the Bayshore at 7 furlongs. Now they run the Jimmy Wingfield, which usually attracts sprinters. It used to be the Bayshore attracted classic horses. And a lot of those horses that ran in the Bayshore had already run at a mile or a mile and a 16th as a two-year-old, and they were dropping back. And so they started off with their sprint race, and then they made the steady progression. But they don't do that anymore. So now you've got horses that are basically one-turn horses. You know, I mean, you got four horses in this race that aren't even nominated to the Triple Crown. Now, I'm not saying that nobody can come out of here. There are a few horses. I mean, there's a horse in here that I've been touting since he broke his maiden that I absolutely love, and I touted him big time in Derby Dozen last week, and that's Attachment Rate. This is a horse, to me, that looks like a really serious Derby horse. You know, if you look at his equibase speed figure in his last start when he broke his maiden, all you have to do is watch that race from a visual standpoint. In a start before that, he came from nowhere. And I mean, the clouds was flying at the end of that race and just got beat by Market Analysis, who's, you know, one of Pletcher's more talented three-year-olds, who was also in the Tampa Derby. But the thing about Attachment Rate is he comes back off of that race and goes a mile, it's in a slop, but you had to watch the race and watch the way he did it and the way he drew off and won big. And he got an equibase speed rating in there of a 106. Now, just to put that in perspective, that's 1 point slower than the Dow got that everybody was raving about. 1 point slower than Thousand Words got. And these are both in grade two stakes. That 106 is puts him as fast as any, been faster than a lot of the major three-year-old Derby contenders this year. I love his pedigree. He's by Heartspun out of an Fleet Alex mare. And listen, if anybody wants to win a major race right now, more than anybody in the country, it's Dale Romans after the debacle of Dennis's Moment, who remains a complete enigma. But listen, we all know how optimistic Dale is, how, you know, every one of his horses is the best, but he really loved Dennis's Moment. He thought he was an absolute lock to win that race. And, you know, you're just waiting for something to have gone wrong with him, and I haven't heard anything yet. So you just don't know. I just don't know what that horse is made of. But anyway, it came as a crushing blow, obviously, to Dale. And now he's got this horse, so he's running him now with back-to-back miles, you know, which is fine. He's gone from 6 to 7 to a mile and then doubled up at a mile. And if he runs big here, you know, chances are he's going to run back again in either the Bluegrass Stakes or the Wood Memorial. So I'm going to consider him a Derby horse. As far as the others, you know, listen, I spoke to Mark Cassie about Untitled because I know, you know, you got to love his last race when he was second to Gouverneur Morris. And even when he finished fourth in the Swale, you know, he had a horrible start in the race. And I thought he did well to finish fourth. He was beaten in the photo by Greenline Go for third. He was actually beaten two photos for second in that race. But Mark seems to think he's probably a one-turn horse. You know, his pedigree is a little bit iffy. So you just don't know. Now, you look on paper at a horse like Montour Traffic. He's got the right running style, and he's got the pedigree. He's by Cross Traffic. You know, it was a mile and an eighth horse. He's out of a Menifee mare. Menifee was just barely beaten in the Kentucky Derby. So, and he won the Haskell. So you look at this horse's running style, and you say, well, maybe he is. I just don't know if Linda Rice is thinking of him as a Derby horse. But we'll see. To me, if Montauk Traffic comes off the pace and wins this race the way he won the Jimmy Wingfield and the way he broke his maiden, maybe he's legitimate. He's got to get a bit faster, you know, a lot of these, you know, slow horses running an aqueduct in the winter, you just don't know. But, of course, the old horse they all have to beat is Mischievous Alex, who's really not, he's nominated in Triple Crown, but I don't think they really consider him a Derby-type horse. He's by Into Mischief out of a Spitestown mare, so he's got pedigree against him. And like I said, you have four horses in the race that that aren't even nominated to the Triple Crown. You know, there's a little bit of everything in here. You know, a horse like Celtic Striker. I mean, you know, does he want to go on? You know, it's possible, but I don't really know if they're really thinking of him as a Derby horse. And if they were, they're going to have to late nominate him because he's one of the horses that's not nominated. So. If I had to talk about another horse in here that would be a Derby horse if he runs here, it would be Wartstopper, who first three races were out, you know, two of them on turf were pretty atrocious. And then in his next start, they put blinkers on him, and he just completely woke up. And he went right to the front, and he won by four lengths, you know, in a pretty decent time at Aqueduct, 137 and 2. I mean, it's, you know, and that's pretty solid. He's by Declaration of War. Out of a Curlin mare, trained by Rudy Rodriguez. If he runs, of course he's owned by Mannequin Stables, so that's besides the point. But if he runs big here, you know they're going to send him on to the to probably the Wood Memorial. So I mean, to me, you got two potential Derby horses in here, two legitimate. That's Attachment Rate and Wartstopper. You know. With the possibility of a couple of others. Montauk Traffic would be one, and possibly Necker Island would be another one. Again, I don't know how far he wants to go. He's going to have to rebound off a poor performance in the Swale. But he was very, very game when he broke his maiden at Churchill Downs. He was going six furlongs, but he did beat Silver State. And again, it was a very, very game effort. So, you know, he had won two in a row going into the Swale. But again, I don't know how far he wants to go. So you just have to see how the races run, how they close. And even if a horse like Mischievous Alex comes back and runs another monster race, you know, if Attachment Rate and Wartstopper can run a good second or third, you got to consider them Derby horses. But no, it's not. It's not a race overloaded with Derby horses, for sure.
No, but it's part of a really fun all stakes pick four. Certainly looking forward to digging in tonight. Let's turn from New York down to Tampa, because this race kind of morphed in 16 different directions. First with Independence Hall backing out, and then with the considerations that Todd Pletcher that was going to potentially run 1, 2, or 3, and then it turned out actually was 1, 2, 3, or 4, because he ended up running somebody that we didn't expect to show up in the entry box. Let's dive in here. This race got, I thought, Steve, very interesting yesterday when they pulled the pills.
Well, I don't know if the third Pletcher horse you're referring to is the horse that I wrote about, but I have to say, you know, on February 11th when I wrote in the Knocking on the Door, this was after the Spa City Maiden Race, when Unrighteous finished second in that race, finished almost 15 lengths ahead of the third horse. I wrote in the Knocking on the Door that Unrighteous was so impressive that he should bypass maiden races and go straight into a stakes race as a maiden. That's how good he is. And I cannot remember the last time I suggested that. Well, we all know that Todd Pletcher reads Derby Dozen religiously and does whatever I say. if I suggest that. So you know he read that and he said, oh, okay. Steve Haskins said that I should bypass a maiden race and go straight into a stakes race, into a grade two stakes race.
That's
so,
what we're
you
doing.
Know what? That's what I'm going to do. And sure enough, here he is in the Tampa Bay Derby as Pletcher's third string. Yeah, and to me, he's as good as the other two horses. The other two horses are coming off of nice maiden wins, but, you know, Market Analysis has only run one sprint. But I thought he looked so good. Now, he doesn't have the greatest action. He's got a little paddling. But he did look better in his last work. And, you know, as far as the action, listen, we saw what Vekoma was capable of with poor action, you know, with the way he won the Bluegrass Stakes. It's something, you know, you don't want to see. Now, he was a little green in that last race because every time he tried to come up to Spa City, just couldn't get by him. He was drifting a little bit, but he gets blinkers on. So that's another plus. So I'm really curious to see how he does in here. He's going to be a long shot, obviously, but he's an interesting one. I mean, how many maidens does Todd Pletcher run in the Grade 2 Stakes? And how many maidens does he run in the Grade 2 Stakes that I suggest he run, run in this race? I never do that. So I'm really curious to see how this horse runs. Sometimes you just look at a horse visually, and you say, wow, this is a good horse. And the way this horse made a move on the turn, and just the overall look of the horse, he's long, lean, looks like a distance-type horse. So I'm really anxious to see how he runs. And I'm also high on the horse that beat him. I mean, Spa City. Now, wouldn't it be a kicker if Kieran McLaughlin winds up as one of the favorites in Derby and cannot get to the Derby, where he's got to give him up? But Spa and it's Godolphin, no less. I mean, who else would McLaughlin would love to win the Derby for than Godolphin? But this horse had run a very good second to a horse I was really high on, named Caracaro, who obviously got hurt, and we haven't seen him since. But then Spa City came back, and just the way he stalked, he's got tremendous cruising speed, and I thought he ran a tremendous race to hold off. And again, like I said, Unrighteous finished 15 lengths, 14 and three-quarter lengths, ahead of the third horse, who was a Chad Brown horse named Telephone Talker, who was the favorite in the race. This was a maiden race that a lot of people were talking about as being a top-class maiden race. So, again, I'm going to see. You know, Spa City goes from Irad Ortiz to Daniel Centeno, so we'll see what happens there. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting facts in here. You know, how's Chance going to handle a track? Yeah, you know, how good is Chance? How good is he away from Gulfstream Park? Is he Derby material? You know, we really don't know. And of course, the horse they have to beat. And it looks like there's going to be pace in here. You know, there's no like speed burners, but everybody wants to be right there. So even if we don't get a fast early pace, we should get a contentious early pace. So it should set up pretty well for Sol Volante. If he runs anywhere near, you know, the race he did in the Sam Davis, he's going to be very, very tough. I mean, the horse has got an absolutely explosive turn of foot. And, you know, and he gets Giroux, you know, from Panici. Nothing against, you know, Panici, but, you know, he doesn't have the Triple Crown experience.
Well, he's hurt.
I don't know. I thought he might get one of the other two mounts if both these horses make it that far. I don't know how badly is he hurt.
He's nicked up. I think it was a shoulder or a...
Yeah, but I think he'll be okay, you know, if Bianco wants to put him on one of the other horses, either Sol Volante or Etier Indien, but we'll see. But, I mean, you know, that's basically the way I look at the race. The other horses, you know, you get horses coming, you know, usual group of horses coming off of impressive maiden wins that we really don't know how good they are. We'll see King Guillermo coming off the turf. He ran a really nice third, stalking the pace, and got caught in the stretch in the Pulpit Stakes by Sol Volante. So, I mean, like, again, if you're looking for a really solid Derby horse, then Sol Volante is a standout in here. Now, you question how good is Market Analysis. You know, like I said, Market Analysis beat Attachment Rate, but, you know, that was a while ago. It was back in January. He hasn't run. That was 7 furlongs, and now he's only had one start in his life. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't, Johnny Velasquez chose him. I don't root for horses like that because I don't like horses running in the Kentucky Derby with three lifetime starts. So, you know, he's going to come back off of this race and have one more start, and he's going to go into Derby with three starts, and he'll go into the Derby, and you'll handicap him and will say, I don't know anything about this horse. I can't handicap a horse in the Kentucky Derby who had three starts, unless he's Justify, you know, who his three races were all freaky races, and his three races in the Triple Crown were freaky races in their own way. Again, we have no clue how great Justified could have been. But, you know, mock analysis is not Justified. So we're going to, you know, we'll see. But I don't usually root for horses like that. And, you know, and Pletcher's other horse, Texas Swing, yeah, he looked okay in his last start, but he was a gigantic favorite. He was an even money favorite in there. So, I don't know really what was in there. There was a few decent horses in here. He won on the front end, so he's got the rail here, so he's obviously most likely going to go to the front under Castellano. And again, you know, these are nice horses, but there are very few proven horses here. Other than Sol Volante, they're not really proven horses. I mean,
no.
they have potential. Like I said, Spa City has potential. I mean, even Fletcher's horses have potential. That's why I don't rule out a horse like Unrighteous. So. Even though he's a maiden, I still think he's capable of running big in here. It's not, you got to beat Sol Volante. After that, if you're a Derby horse, you're capable of beating any horse in this race. You know, what's anybody proven? Even Spa City, who I like in here a lot, he hasn't proven he's a Derby horse. So you know, see. I don't know. You like anybody in this race?
I haven't gone deep. I mean, I just assumed that Sol Volante will be very tough, and I expect Chancet to run well, and try to figure out who might have an opportunity to do something in here. I'm certainly going to have to look hard at Graham Motion's horse with Mr. Campbell, the Uncle Mo out of Carlovi Vary, who was a personal favorite, but. You know, they're obviously taking an audition on the dirt. Why not, I suppose. But yeah, it feels like he's a turf horse going forward. But we'll see.
And then you got a horse like Mimosa, you know, Mike Maker's horse, who's only run on Polytrack. So, again, we have no clue. I mean, he's by Uncle Mo out of an Escenderia mare, so this is all Pletcher breeding. But, you know, each race has gotten progressively better. You know, in his last start, he won very nicely. He won drawing off to break his maiden, and he's never run. Listen, if he runs, if he handles the dirt, and you know his workouts have been, so. But again, they're on Polytrack, so you can't tell from workouts, and you can't tell from his races. The one thing you can go by is that he did get blinkers on in his last start. When he improved dramatically and again drew off to win by almost six lengths. So if he runs anywhere back to that race and handles the dirt, based on pedigree, you know, Uncle Maul or Scandarea, there's no reason why he shouldn't. So I'll be interested to see how a horse like Mimosa runs. If he wins this race, then he's a legitimate Derby horse.
There's another Uncle Mo too. I mean, it's very, very funny that you got three Uncle Mo's that are all making transitions to dirt, because there's also Slow Sand, the Slow Sand son, this King Guillermo, and the family has all essentially been Irish. All the babies have been Irish, and have been campaigned elsewhere, and I'm curious what this is from Juanavia.
Well, like I said, I mean, I thought his third in the pulpit, to Sol Volante was an excellent race. He tracked the pace, opened up a clear lead, and he just couldn't hold off the top two. But you know, he ran okay. He got good speed ratings in the race, and the other thing is he has run on dirt once. He made his debut with Gulfstream and did absolutely nothing in the race. So you don't know if that's a true indicator or not. I don't like to know by career debuts
exactly
to determine whether a horse likes the dirt or not.
I'll say this:
he's gonna have to improve off a bad race.
Well, there's two things that are notable. For starters, this is his 3-year-old debut he's making. Mm-hmm. And you're 75 days or so since you know, since he last ran. First Start is a 3-year-old. He could be a different horse. And that dam, Slow Sand, happens to be a half-sister of Funny Duck, the Pat Day mile upsetter for Rusty Arnold.
Yeah, and Funny Duck.
So there's a an interesting name to come up
about this horse. By the way, you know, if you're looking at it, is that he has been working at Gulfstream, and two works back he worked 59 and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, so
well, we'll check.
I know it was in his slop, but he still worked 59-3 on the dirt. So that's at least something to hang your hat on if you're looking for, you know, for if you're looking for a price, Uncle Mo. You know, it's something you can lean back on.
Listen, Sol Volante, I mean, I know it was on the grass, as you mentioned, in the pulpit. This is an interesting, King Guillermo, an interesting, and my name, my name in high school, my name in Spanish class, because there was already an Esteban. So I couldn't be Steven. I couldn't be Esteban. So I ended up being Guillermo.
I don't know where your teacher came up with Guillermo. My teacher, however, was a lot more clever than your teacher. Because in my Spanish class, we had two Estebans, too. So there was an Esteban, and I was Estebanito.
Little Steve. Little Steven.
Steve. and you know me with school, by the way. So I would sit there, and the teacher would ask a question. And he asked a question, and he'd say, okay, and what does this mean, Esteban? And I'd say, please don't say Ito. Please end it at the end. Esteban. I don't want to hear Ito at the end of it.
Stop Estebanito.
Now
you're in trouble because the listen, now everybody's going to start calling you Little Stevie.
Better than Guillermo. I don't know where he came up with that one, but
Bill.
Oh, Guillermo, all right, sorry, William, right.
Funny. Yeah, so let's go.
There's something the world does not know about me, that I was at one point in my life Estebanito.
It's something new always comes out, no matter how many.
You know why, Steve? Because you have a knack of bringing it out.
Let's bring out the West Coast heavy hitters, Steve. And this race ended up filling up a little bit, and it's nice that there'll be some traffic and there'll be, you know, as opposed to a 4 or 5 horse field. But you ended up with 7 in the San Felipe. And obviously the principals with Honor AP and Authentic and 1,000 Words and Storm the Court. But Wrecking Crew, had a look about him as a 2-year-old. Fort McHenry shows up here now in the hands of Doug O'Neill. And something called Swagsational with a trainer coming out of Turf Paradise, Heath Lawrence. And a gallant son, a Washington bred. So we'll check with John White as to the background of Swagsational. But anyway, talk about the San Felipe.
Well, first of all, it's interesting that Peter Ertin actually made a last minute decision. He had decided he was going to the Rebel with Storm the Court, and I don't know if it had anything to do with it. But after the horse worked 59-2, had a bullet workout. It was a fastest of 61 works at the distance. And he may have just looked at that work and say, "Whoa, you know,
my
horse is ready. The heck with the two Baffert horses." I also heard rumblings, and obviously nothing came to it. It was just rumors that Baffert had been contemplating possibly scratching 1,000 Words and waiting and running him, maybe seeing if the Rebel would split or something. But obviously he is not. He's not doing that. So thank goodness, because I want to see these two horses run against each other, because 1,000 Words to me does not have to win this race as much as Authentic does, because
right.
Authentic is the one everyone is talking about. This is the brilliant horse. This is the horse that, you know, I mean, he's coming off of a monster Equibase number, big speed figures all around, and the fact that he was able to win by almost 8 lengths, ducking in twice, you know, to the rail. Being extremely green, since then, his workouts have been terrific. I mean, he's worked really, really strong. So he's the big buzz horse right now, and he's the horse that really needs to come out here and run a big race. 1,000 words, he's not the brilliant. He's not going to wow you. You know, he's going to win by three quarters, or he's going to win by a half, or he's going to win by a neck or whatever. He's going to do just what he has to win. And if Authentic runs his eyeballs out and the 1,000 words runs second in here, that's perfect. I mean, Baffert couldn't ask for anything more. He's not going to kill this horse to win the San Felipe. He's still got the San Anita Derby to come. And listen, both of these horses, I mean, they don't exactly shout a mile and a quarter. You know, Authentic is by Into Mischief. He's out of a Mr. Greeley mash. He got speed on top, speed on the bottom. There is stamina. I'm not going to take that away. There is stamina, in his female family. But close up, there's a lot of speed. And then 1,000 words is by Pioneer of the Nile, who has obviously sired distance horses, also has sired horses that have run short. He's out of a Pomeroy mare. Pomeroy was a pure sprinter who was by a pure sprinter. But he's by a pure sprinter who did sire a Kentucky Derby winner. So sometimes you just don't know. I'm not saying either one of these horses can't go a mile and a quarter. I'm just saying the pedigree don't shout a mile and a quarter. It's not like a sure thing they're going to get it. So as far as the two Baffert horses, the ideal scenario would be for Authentic to win and 1,000 words to run second. Also, you look at a 1,000 word style of running, very AP Indy-like, where he runs with that head down and never looks like he's running fast, but he always somehow manages to get to the lead somehow and just manages to win by what he has to win. He's not going to draw off on you, and he's not going to set track records. He's not going to do anything wild. His last workout was excellent. He worked 59-4. I thought it was a very good work. And Baffert's work, he worked him 7 furlongs and 26-4. So he has put a bottom in him. He hasn't run in a while. So, I shouldn't say he hasn't run in a while, but he hasn't run in, what is it? It's going to be five weeks or so. So that's not too bad. So anyway, that's where the two Baffert horses stand up. As far as Honor AP, this is the horse everybody's talking about. Everybody on my blog, everybody loves Honor AP. And listen, off his first start, you had to love the way he closed in that race. I mean, he closed like a wild horse in there, and closed to a good horse in Ginobili. And then he came back in his second start when he broke well in that race instead of the first race where he's a dozen lengths off the pace. And he went to the front, and he threw off, and he won very nicely. Very striking horse. And he's another horse who runs with his head down and looks like he's running much slower. He's a big, long, striding horse, as his 1,000 words. Makes it look like he's running slower than he normally is. He's got a lot of Honor code in him. He's very flashy. He's got a white face, and he's got a white leg. He's got sort of an unusual way of running, and maybe all that white enhances that. So, he's out of a tremendous mare, in Hollywood Story, who everybody knows her accomplishments. And it's John Sheriff. So, everybody's looking at this horse, ridden by Mike Smith. So I think the interesting thing with him is that we just don't know how good he is or if he's ready to handle this caliber of horses. And then now, with Storm the Court, if you like the horse, and a lot of people don't. The horse has got very little respect for a champion and a Breeders' Cup winner. But you had to love that last workout. His workouts have been okay. They've been always, around the 101, mark. And then to work 59-2, to work a bullet workout with that many horses, you know he's very, very sharp. The one thing he's got to do here that we don't know about him, now, Flavian Pratt obviously had to give up that mount because he's riding 1,000 words, so Joel Rosario picks it up. The thing about Storm the Court, the one thing I want to see from him, I want to see a definitive running style. I don't know how this horse wants to run. Is he a speed horse? Does he want to sit just off the pace? Does he want to come from off the pace? I really don't know. I don't know. Does he have a closing punch? We don't know. I mean, we know how game he was when he went to the lead in the Breeders' Cup and he held off, Anodore and Wrecking Crew, who neither one of us, has done much since. Although Anodore did run well in Los Altos 30, but the Wrecking Crew hasn't done much since. Obviously he came back into San Vicente, which I loved. And even though he was fourth in the race, everybody talks about Hunter Dow. He came back in 3 weeks. And, you got to give him credit. Second start, coming back in 3 weeks, throwing a 44 flat half and hold on and win. Well, I mean, this horse is not really, he's never been known for, as a speed horse. And he was a length off the pace. So you got to give him credit. He was beaten 2 1/4 lengths for all the money. He was just barely beaten by Fast Enough, who I thought actually would show up in here. The horse that finished third, the Cal Cup Derby winner. I thought he would show up in here. And then that Ginobili, who I mentioned before, he had come back and run a big second in that race in the San Vicente. So again, Storm the Court, it was a fine race. He dropped back. He did come on again in the stretch, made up a couple lengths in the last eighth of a mile, but we don't know how he wants to run. We don't know if he's is he speed? Is he going to go to the front in this race coming off that workout? Is he going to be laying second? If he lays second, does he have the high cruising speed that way he can just keep going and going and going? If he's running third or fourth in here, like four lengths off the pace, does he have the closing punch? So he still has questions to answer. We know he's a good horse, but this is probably a better spot for him. The Rebel, just looks like a total mishmash of horses coming from everywhere. And we don't know what to expect there, and we don't know if that race is going to be split. The last I heard is that I think they've got like 16 in there. So I think they want to aim for 20. So I don't know if it's going to be split or not. If they did split the race, Baffert might wind up sending 8 Rings out there to run in the other division with Nadal, because 8 Rings has been working really strong. But ideally, would he love to run 1,000 Words in the other division? Possibly. I think he probably would. I just don't know if he wants to take a chance whether that race is going to split or not. So there's a lot of questions when you have as many Derby horses as Baffert has. And what do you do with Charlotte? Are you going to try and get this horse to the Derby? Well, he's got one sprint. If you do, you better start doing stuff now. Not much, if you want to get 2 races in this horse, he's got to go, he would have to go Rebel, Arkansas Derby, and even then, he'd have only 3 starts going into the Kentucky Derby. So, Baffert's got a lot of decisions to make. And we'll see what happens with the Rebel. The Rebel's going to be very interesting. I don't see why they can't split it with 18, 9 in each division. I don't see anything wrong. I don't know why they need 10 in each division. But it'll be interesting to see if they do split it. But anyway, I think Peter Ertin probably made the right decision, staying home, see what he's got here. He doesn't need to beat Authentic. If he can beat one of the 2 Baffert horses and run second in here or a strong third, that's fine. It'll set him up for the San Diego Derby. He's the kind of horse that just keep improving. He should improve as the distances go along. I mean, he certainly got stamina in his pedigree. So that's the way I look at the horse. Fort McHenry's a guess. Doug O'Neill took over for Todd Pletcher. I really don't know how good he is. I mean, he seems overmatched in here. But, we'll see. And as far as Wrecking Crew, he's got to improve a lot. He hasn't run since the Los Al Futurity. And it's very rare when you see a horse run fourth in a race and get beat 42 lengths running fourth. So, he pretty basically was eased in the race. Has he run good races? Yeah, he was third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, like I said. He had been second in the Del Mar Futurity. The horse that won that race has been distanced in every one of his races, that Nucky. So we'll see what happens. Anybody you like here?
Well, my tie is to 1,000 Words, who, having been at the Los Al Futurity and at the Lewis, I'm just so impressed with.
You're following this horse around. You got to
Yeah, I just, And I don't think he has to win either here. And he's my type of Derby prospect in terms of, you know, clipping along at 24 and change. I thought it was notable that the work on Monday, and I got to tell you, in fact, Johnny D and I were talking about this morning, Steve, and you can riff on it yourself. There's a real exercise and a valuable exercise for players and people that want to understand how horses are trained to watching all of the Baffert workouts, because you juxtapose the workout that Nadal had versus the 1,000 words had.
Yes, and I think I know where you're going with this.
It's unbelievable, you know, for those that just seem to take shots at Baffert and just say stupid things. If you can't watch these and understand how he handles these horses, he had a 7-furlong published work for Nadal that was actually a work of 1 1/16.
Yeah, I knew you were going there. And what was the main difference? What was the main difference between, forgetting about the distance, what was the main difference between 1,000 words work and Nadal's work?
Nadal is kept to
the stretch out
and the finishing up. And 1,000 words, who's already got his stamina built, that was
exactly
a work where he pulls
it
up past the wire, and he's basically...
Exactly.
He was drilled for speed in here, and he's trying to sharpen him up. And I'm sorry. It's amazing to me. If you don't understand why Baffert is where he is with the 3-year-olds, just watch every single work that he authors with these horses. It's unbelievable.
Everyone is well orchestrated. Yes. And that's exactly, I wrote that in Derby Dozen where, I said, you know, he worked 5 furlongs because the horse didn't need to go out anymore. What do you need to do with 1,000 words? You need to sharpen his speed.
Yep.
What do you need to do with Nadal? You got to put bottom in him. And the thing is, Baffert also, you know, the way he usually works horses, he'll work shorter. So what I mean, he won't work if he's working 6 furlongs. He'll work from the 5 and work past the wire. That's why his horses keep going like that past the wire. And the Dow just kept going and going and going. And the 1,000 words, who doesn't need that? Because he had a long workout before that. He's got the bottom under him. He just needs to be sharpened. And the last thing he wants him to do is to work 5 furlongs in 59 and go out in 111. You know, and then pull up in 125 or something. You know, it's the last thing he needs. So, you know... Believe me, I mean, all these workouts are so well orchestrated.
The Nadal
work. I'm glad you saw the same.
Yeah, to me, the Nadal work was just jaw dropping.
The horses kept going. That's why Baffert can win the Derby with a horse with three starts, and he could probably do it again if his horse is good enough. You know, I put him in the top 12, and now all he has to do is if he shows he can excel at the two turns, then he'll move way up the list. I just want to wait. I still like to tend towards horses with races under them, with two turn races, and I want them to prove it. But after watching that workout, is anybody going to watch the Rebel Stakes and thinks this horse is not going to be very, very, very tough?
Well, we even had the discussion after the San Vicente, because Baffert said specifically he's using it as a paid workout, essentially.
Yeah.
He wanted to get something, you know, something hard into him, and so rather than workout, let's run in a 7-furlong race. You enhance the horse's resume with it, and you set him up for his next assignment.
Not only that, but in that workout, you see how far he broke behind his pace setter?
Yeah.
I mean, his workmate, I should say. And not only that, but usually when you get a horse like that, if you break him off, you know, 3-4 lengths behind the workmate, and then, you know, come to 3/8 poll, and they just pounce all over him. He didn't. He waited and waited and waited and didn't really go after him until they hit the head of the stretch.
The 8th poll.
Yeah. So then that's when he finally put him away and drew off. But he bided his time, which is what you like to see. So he's training him. He's training him like a, you know, like a derby horse who has not been two turns yet. But the one thing I wrote in Derby Dozen, I said his workout, he looked like a professional come from behind horse.
Everybody's learning different lessons. They're being applied. And as crazy as this sounds, Baffert's the closest thing you've got right now to an Alan Jerkins approach. That is, he's just not afraid to lean on these horses. You know, so many people are nervous that, oh, they're gonna, you know, injure the $750,000 purchase.
That's why they all get injured.
Exactly, because they baby them, and Baffert just leans on them and has them, you know, has them fit and has them right. I just was amazed by what I saw the last couple of days.
And not only that, you know, to turn to old school again, you know, if you start mentioning, you know, you mentioned Alan Jerkins, mention some of his contemporaries, even before him, okay? You mentioned Max Hirsch, and you mentioned John Gaver, who trained all the Green Tree horses, and you mentioned Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons with all of his horses. They all have one thing in common. They all were hard on their horses, and that was the way they culled out the bad ones. So If Max Hirsch had 30 or 42-year-olds, he would be hard on those horses. And the ones that couldn't stand up to it, they'd get rid of them. The ones that could stand up to his training, that could go 58 and change or so, those were your assaults and your middle grounds and all those kind of horses and your Gallant Blooms. The ones that could stand up to him. And Gaver would work his horses 58, 59, all those Green Tree horses. Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons was hard on his horses. Alan Jerkins would work a horse. Alan Jerkins worked Bo Purple a mile and an eighth the day before he beat Kelso in one handicap.
Yeah.
You know, you look at those trainers. I remember Buck Passer, you know, in the race of the century, you know, the Woodward Stakes. You know, Buck Passer hadn't been out, so Eddie Neroy worked him, you know, a week before the race. He worked him a mile and eighth and 149 and won. You know, and Alan Jerkins' philosophy was, I'm going a mile and a quarter. What do I got to work him six furlongs? I mean, what do I work him four furlongs for? He's going a mile and a quarter. If Alan Jerkins is going 2 miles, he'll work a horse a mile and a half. What do you think he did with Prove Out? I think he got Prove Out to beat Secretariat going a mile and a half, coming off a mile and a 16th. Horse had never run more than a mile and 16th in his life. And he beat Secretariat going a mile and a half and runs the second fastest mile and a half in the history of Belmont. And then he comes back and beats River Ridge and runs the second fastest Jockey Club Gold Cup behind Kelso and runs off and wins that race after running opening fractions that were faster than any Gold Cup in memory, faster than Kelso, faster than Damascus, faster than Arts and Letters, faster than any of those horses. He did it because he would work them a mile and he'd work them a mile and a half, and then come back and blow them out half a mile in 47 2 days later.
Hmm.
You know, I mean that's the way. You know, listen, we've had some unorthodox training. Look at Maximum Security. You look at him, you say, what kind of workouts are these? You remember Doug O'Neill with I'll Have Another and with Nyquist.
That's true.
Bizarre workouts. He won the Derby with both of them. You know, they didn't last, but he won the Derby with both of them. But you look at Maximum Security. You know, I mean, you start looking, what, you're working 53? Yeah, well, you got to watch how, you know, you got to watch the work. The works don't start until the finish line.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jason Service is, well, you know, training old school. You know, you do what's best for the horse. There's no formula. You can't just go out there and, you know, listen, Steve Asmussen will work his horses 50 every workout. Works for him. What works for some trainers don't work for other trainers.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if, you know, we'll see if Asmussen can win the Derby training that way.
It's come
but
close.
I know the trainers that they train unorthodox, and they're some of the great trainers of all time. And the horses do things that most horses nowadays could never do. And Baffert has his way of training. I still understand why trainers, all trainers, don't use the walkie talkies. For me, it makes perfect sense to be in contact with your rider. Baffert knows exactly what kind of fractions, what he wants the rider to do. Sometimes he won't tell a rider how to go out until after he sees what kind of fractions they run. You know, how frustrating can it be for a trainer, you know, when his horse goes out there in 45 and change and 110, and then the jockey, and he gave a jockey instructions to work him out past the wire. You know, and he's dying to reach out there and say, don't work him out past the wire. You know, he's went too fast early. But you can't do it, you know, unless you have the two-way radio. I guess they don't call them walkie-talkies anymore.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, okay. But, I thought more trainers. Baffert was so successful with it. But trainers don't use it. But, I watched Baffert use them all the time, and I watched him call audibles in a workout. You know, even in gallops, he'll give riders instructions on what to do when watching a horse gallop with the radio on.
We'll see. We'll see the results, how it turns out. And Steve, we've got about a minute and 2 minutes, two and a half. And Rich Eng, I'm going to get Rich in tomorrow to talk about.
Sorry, Rich.
That's all right. We'll get to. Well, we ended up falling behind pretty quickly today, but we'll get Rich on tomorrow with all the. We'll do all the previews. And let me slip in a couple of quick things. Tomorrow, the Maryland Senate votes on the plan for Laurel and Pimlico, and then it'll go to the House next week. It'll expected to be on the governor's desk by the end of next week. So this continues to march forward. Tomorrow, when Marty McGee joins us, we'll get the Derby and Oaks future wager conversation in Pool 3. For Derby, the only pool available for Oaks. We also have to have a little bit more Kieran McLaughlin talk as well. And
that would be funny, though, if Kieran winds up with a legitimate Derby horse.
It's pretty crazy.
Giving him up.
You know? We'll see.
I also want to quickly throw in, by the way,
that
I got to give a lot of credit, considering all the competition and how far down this race has come. You know, credit to Sandy the Handicap. I mean, with everything. I mean,
right.
He came up with a damn interesting race. I mean, you got the two big horses out there, Gift Box and Midcourt, who are both really good horses. He got Endorse coming in. People forget Endorse was one of the top 3-year-olds this year. He ran a huge race in the Travers. I know Hofburg didn't run well first time out, but they managed to get Vilmot shipping out there. We know on his best day what Hofburg is. I mean, you know, they drew an interesting race. It's not a big deal,
did.
Obviously, but I give him credit for that. It's an interesting field.
It's a great card.
35 is not a bad horse. You know, he's a solid horse. Never, you know, rarely runs a bad race. Richard Baltus is horse. It's very interesting. You got this Chilean horse, this Brown Storm, who's coming. Coming up to our turf races and the synthetic race. We don't know. You know how sometimes you see horses come off the turf and other surfaces and go to San Anita and handle the dirt.
Yep.
So, you know, we'll have to see how good this horse is. He doesn't win much, but you know, got to respect the Chilean horses. And, you know, each race in this country has gotten better. He even ran a nice race in the San Marcos. So, it's a very interesting race. Can't give him credit, considering the fact that, you know, I mean, he got killed by the Pegasus, then going.
Yep, exactly.
And now it's with the Saudi Cup, and then the Dubai World Cup. You know, there's so much competition now, and nobody wants to run in this race anymore. all the Californians. And Baffert sending everybody, you know, to the Middle East. And a lot of these trainers are shipping. Doug O'Neill shipped out, you know, he shipped the whole string out there to Dubai.
And he's done well. When Parsimony comes back, anxious. In fact, I've been trying to get Doug on for 2 weeks. He couldn't do it this morning, so we'll talk to Doug probably next week. And he's got, I think, 5 running on Super Saturday at Dan.
Even with the big American horses, you know, not going into the Dubai World Cup, you still got Mucho Gusto going out there, and you still got Tacitus going out there.
Yep.
So. We're still going to be pretty well represented in that race.
Very much so. And Stephen, I was going to try to slip in the Hall of Fame stuff and get your reactions because you're a part of the nominating process for the finalists. But we'll save that. And speaking of Doug O'Neill and so forth, a couple of names mentioned today, Mark Cassie as well.
Yeah, we had a push to get him out.
That's all right. All right. Well,
everybody tells you a vote, and then we're given the voters are given another chance. Like if somebody's one short, they'll say, you know, if anyone wants to campaign for a trainer, and there were a few that had just missed, and then people contact other people and other people add them on there. So several who were not on the initial ballot did get on. After they came out, they'll say, one vote short. Let's get him on. He deserves to be on the ballot, and Doug O'Neill certainly deserves to be on the ballot.
We'll get those conversations in when we can. Steve Haskin, everybody, and the big weekend ahead. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow. I want to thank Michael Hoy, Steve, and Dick Powell, as well as Pat Costello, honoring Jerry Dilger. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, and then the big weekend preview. A lot of handicapping to come. Talk to you in the morning.